The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew. When the Pharisees heard that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, they assembled in a body, and one of them, a lawyer, in an attempt to trip him up, asked him, "Teacher, which commandment of the law is the greatest?" Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments the whole law is based, and the prophets as well." The Gospel of the Lord. Nice gospel? How nice? What do you like about it? You love it? What? You love it. What do you love about it? God loves you and you love him. Anything else?
Simple and straightforward.
Simple and straightforward. Pardon? Hard to follow. Interesting. Thank you, Peggy. Interesting because for a week now, since the 23rd week, we are now at the 30th week, the 23rd week, there was a parable attached to all of these. And we see it in that context. We see the gospel specifically in that context. Remember all of the parables? You remember them all? Oh, my Lord, how in the world are we going to grow through this? Remember the first parable, what was it about? Going back along, he said, hey, if you've got something against your friend, go directly to them, right? And get it sorted out. Don't be gossiping about them, about what they did to you and putting on a pity party and wasting your time and energy with foolishness like that. Go directly to the person, get it sorted out. And then we followed on and Peter says, "Lord, let's cut to the chase. How many times do I have to forgive somebody?" And Jesus said, "Peter, have you been with me all this time and still you don't understand this?" Peter said, "How about 7 times, like once every day?" And he thought maybe that was generous. And the Lord said, "Hey, grow a whole lot bigger than that. Maybe think of it in terms of how often are you in need of my forgiveness? That may be a good starting point. Because it's not 70 times or 75 times or 70 times 7 times. It is an attitude, a disposition that I am in need of his forgiveness. And when he gives me that forgiveness and I trust that he is giving me that forgiveness, then I can't hoard it or keep it for myself. I've got to be a steward of that forgiveness. Hey, it stops the process if I receive his forgiveness and then don't give it out to others in kind. That's pretty simple. And then he told them about, remember the laborers in the vineyard? And he gave them all the same wage and they were so disappointed. Man, they were chapped. They say, "We've been working hard all day at this, and you give them the same wage as us." And Jesus said, "Get over it, folks. There's only one wage." And once you focus your mind and your heart on that reality, then you might begin to get the real picture, the big picture. There's only one reward. And if we really understood it, we would be pulling for everybody to get that reward. We wouldn't be here spiting them and saying, "Well, they don't deserve it, and they don't..." It's not a deserved position. It's not a merited experience. We are not living in the order of meritocracy. We are living in the kingdom of God. It's all freely given and all freely welcomed if we choose to. Nobody is pressured to accept the deal or the plan. But it is wide open to everyone. The greatest thing about the living God is he wants all of his sons and daughters to come to salvation. Whether they want to, another question. And then he talked about the vineyard that didn't have any fruits. And then he talked about the people who were in charge of the vineyard and they wouldn't let other people in and they argued with them and they tried to control the vineyard. And he sent his servants to get his share of the grapes. And they said, let's kill him. Let's take out the threat. We live by that pretty well. Let's eliminate the threat. And then he moved on and he said there was a father, he had two sons, he asked them both to go and work in the vineyard. One said yes, but they didn't go. Another said, no, we won't go. But they later on, they regretted it. That was the sinners and the prostitutes and the tax collectors. And they were turning their lives around and saying, yeah, we'll work in the vineyard. They got it a little later. But the scribes and the Pharisees, they said, we'll go. But no, they didn't go. In fact, they kept other people from going. So all of these parables coming week after week and coming in the teaching of Jesus as he was moving definitively toward Jerusalem and toward fulfillment, those were important parables. And man, they were chapping these religious leaders. And you can see why. He was holding up an image of God and he was saying, hey, you're not anything really like this. You know, with all your religiosity, he held up a mirror. He said, this is what you're talking about, demanding of people, and you think yourself so righteous. This is what God is really like. That's what he did in that parable. He said, let me show you what God is really like. And he showed them, and hey, it caused a great angst in their spirit. So they were moving toward this, and they come up with the oldest plan in the world. We've got to eliminate the threat. So last week, then they tried. Remember? Your memory is not really slipping, is it? Remember, they said, well, in an attempt to trap him, right? And the trap was, hey, it was a great trap. They said, hey, because of this Roman occupation, we are against the Roman occupation. People ordinarily are against the occupation of their country by another country. It's kind of standard operating procedure. The people resent being occupied by another people. The Jews were no different in that reality. They expected that Jesus, as a good Jew, would feel the very same way as they did. So they set the trap. Now they bring some Herodians with them, who are another sect, another group of the Pharisees, but they have different beliefs than some of the mainstream, the religious leadership people. Issues and questions with the resurrection, the idea of resurrection, and some theological issues. But they bring them in because they are sympathizers with the Roman occupation and they get some benefits from Rome occupying the territory. And so, the perfect trap. And Jesus says, well, is it lawful, they said, to pay taxes or not? As Jewish friends, and he being a Jew himself, they would have expected he would say, no, it's not lawful to pay taxes because they're not legally in, you know, occupying your territory and all the details that they had. And Jesus said, hey, show me a coin that you use to pay the taxes. Whose inscription? Whose image? Caesar. Hey, give to Caesar what is Caesar's. I don't get into the political arena. That's what Jesus was telling him. Because life is not just about politics. Life is about the kingdom of God, and that's why I have come into the world. So, then we read in the gospel today, after that episode, wow, the opening of the gospel. When the Pharisees heard that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together, and one of them, a scholar of the law, tested him by asking. Jesus had silenced the Sadducees. Who were the Sadducees? The Herodians. Same people. They'd been there last week. Ah, and the Pharisees said, wow, that quieted them down. They went home with their tail between their legs when they tried to pull this one over about the taxes and make it a political agenda. Jesus took care of that. He moved right through it. So what happens? Same thing that happens all the time. We don't give up. We'll try another one. We'll try another one. We'll try again. And so now they gather some of their own and they say, okay, let's try Well, let's try something on the law. Maybe we can trip him up on the law. Not a very wild or out of the ordinary question. The question would have been discussed quite often in rabbinical circles. What is the most important law? Which one, if you were to pick one, which one would you say? How many laws were there in the rabbinical code? 613. The understanding and the accepted procedure was a good Jew knew all 613 precepts of the law, and then if a good Jewish person wanted to come to righteousness or fulfillment or acceptance, then they knew all of these 613 precepts and they worked at following them, and they made their way to fulfillment or to justification. Wow, did Jesus have some good news for them? As Paul points out to the Romans, salvation does not come from observance of the law, but rather through faith in Jesus Christ. Ironically, 2,000 years later, we're really not convinced of that truth. We're not. And that's what this issue is about. So let's see if we can trip him up. Which is the most important commandment of the law? Some of them naturally would have thought, well, probably the one that has to do with the widows and orphans, because that was extremely important, and how often it was celebrated. It was celebrated in the Psalms. Blessed are those who take care of the widows and the orphans. Another might have said, well, the most important law, period, is love of God. Or another would have said, no, the most important thing is following the law of the Lord. Hey, it was honored in the Psalms. I love the law of the Lord. Blessed is the law of the Lord. Well, come on. A fool could know the 613 precepts. But it doesn't denote anything about having a relationship with Him. I could know all of the precepts. A lawyer could know all of the laws, but that doesn't mean that they practice or interpret or apply appropriately all of the details. But for a lot of the Jewish people, because there wasn't a hope or an expectation of resurrection afterwards, the whole thing was about fulfillment of the law, following all of these precepts. In a sense, I'm making myself religious and holy. Wow. It's alive and well still. And Jesus addressed it very clearly. They said, okay, tell us which one. Jesus said, well, I have some really good news for you. It's not one, but two. Because you can't separate these realities. Much and all as we like to. And so he zeroed right through their little question. Pew! The greatest commandment is love of God. Not a head trip, not just a heart trip, or not an instinctual trip. The number one commandment is love of God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your being, with all your strength, and with all your mind. And the second is very much like it. He said, pay great attention. It's very much like it. In fact, you know the old song verse? You can't have one without the other. That's how tight they are. Love of God with all of your being, not a head trip, not a knowledge trip, not acquiring stuff or things or beliefs or anything else, but love of God for who God is, and love your neighbor as yourself. Now, then he went on to say, and this was a real kicker to those people who loved the law and who knew the law, and the real rabbinical leaders, they could quote all 613 precepts, and they would say, 473 says such and such, and they could do well on that. But Jesus said, hey, folks, that's not it. It's not what it's about. This is about a personal relationship. This is about not knowing the law of God, but knowing God. And so he caused a great little disturbance, and so much so he added at the end, he said, "My friends, let me tell you something even more than this. This sums up the law and the prophets." Final line of the gospel. You know what the law and the prophets is? The law and the prophets is the Old Testament. The whole Old Testament, not pieces of it, every bit of it. First five books of the Bible, the Pentateuch, the law. That's what they call it, the Torah. Where all of the laws, all 613 precepts are laid out. Love of God is in there and love of neighbor is in there. Two separate entities. Jesus takes them, smacks them together, said, "Folks, try this on. If you really want to be engaged, bring it on." That sums up the whole Old Testament. Love of God and love of your neighbor. The early desert monks had a great abbot, a little group of them that were in community, and his name was Moses, and they elected Moses because of his great spirituality to be their leader, to be the abbot. And they re-elected him again and re-elected him again because he was a pious and holy and well-integrated man, and they loved him dearly. And then it came preparation for Easter. And as was their custom, they said, "Well, what are we going to do to prepare ourselves appropriately for Easter, to celebrate the Easter event, the experience of Jesus' resurrection?" And it was a week before Holy Week, and so they all came together with the abbot, and they decided, "Well, let us do this, let us stay up at night and pray, and let us do this and this." And eventually, after their discussion, they agreed, "Here's what we'll do. We'll fast for the whole of Holy Week, beginning on Palm Sunday and ending at night on Easter Sunday. We'll fast and pray through this whole period." And that was solidly agreed upon, and so each of them went off to their own cells to pray and to fast for the upcoming week. And then it was about the middle of the week, it was Wednesday, and two wandering monks came along, and they came by the little hut of the abbot. They came to his door and he invited them in, and he could see that they were starved. And so he said, "Brothers, let me prepare a little vegetable stew for you." And so he lit a fire and he began to prepare a vegetable stew for them. Good hearty stuff, you know. The Irish stew, you throw a little bit of this and a little everything, a little whiskey and a little, you know. And you really do it up, it's good health. And he said, "Hey, let me prepare you a little stew." And he did. And then to help them out, because they were a little anxious because of this solemn fast, he took a little himself so as to make them feel comfortable. And don't you know what happened? The other brothers saw the smoke. And what did they think? They thought, "What a holy man." No, they didn't. They thought, "What a son of a gun. He's not that holy at all after all." There's only one thing he could be doing, lighting a fire to prepare some food. And so they got all of this energy and got charged up. And as a group, they came to confront him. And when they stood in front of him, he looked in their eyes and he said, "I can see the judgment in your eyes." He said, "What did I do wrong?" They said, "You broke the solemn fast." Ooh, ooh. He said, "You're right." But he said, in breaking the solemn fast, he said, the commandment of men, he said, "I followed the commandment of God in giving food to these brothers who were starving." They went away wiser, maybe with their tail between their legs, because we love to be right, and sometimes it's more important than the truth, the very truth itself. Which is the most important law? Which is the most important commandment of God? It's interesting that after 2,000 years, we still struggle immensely with that reality. There are a lot of people who live in the world, and they're very devout in their prayers and their devotions and in their practice of devotions. But many of those people extricate themselves from the responsibility of loving their neighbor. They can quite often become extremely judgmental of their neighbor precisely because they do all of these pious things and pious actions and prayers. And they can be extremely difficult, and they can be a real pain in the, you know, to live with because of such righteousness that they build around themselves. And then there's another body of people. They become very engaged in people and relationships, and they can be some of the real champions of social justice and issues of race and discrimination, and they're out front fighting all of these. But oftentimes, they forget to pray. They forget to be connected with God. And they can be so involved in the service of other people from one project to another. The truth is, both of those have half of the gospel. Neither one of them have the whole gospel. The whole gospel, Jesus said, can be summarized. Love of God with all your heart, with all your soul, all your being, and all your strength. And then love of neighbor as yourself. And there is no separation. As St. John could say so well in his letter, liar! How can you say you love him and act in that way toward your brothers and sisters? Liar. Liar. It's an integration of truth. Giving expression to my relationship with him. But we tend to be weighted on one side or the other for most of us as human beings. And it's hard to balance those two. We tend to be, and if you were to examine your own self and your own life, the question would be, on which side am I more weighted? Am I more weighted on that side of really trusting him, speaking to him, being in communion, being in relationship with him? Or am I more on the side of service, people, relationships? Where does my strength come from? From other people? From God? Or from within? I want you to notice exactly what Jesus said, because I think it's particularly important. I think we've missed it a great deal in life. I want you to pay attention throughout the week to one word in the gospel. What one word would you think? Huh? Love, nice word. Any others? I would like you to pay attention to the word as. A-S. Where does it come in the gospel? Love your neighbor as yourself. I think that is probably one of the most misunderstood concepts in the Christian experience. When I was growing up, I was told and I was taught that that meant putting everybody ahead of myself. How many of you learned that kind of an idea? Wow, not too many of you. Man, you were very fortunate, because you're very fortunate if you didn't learn that. Because that is nothing but hogwash, putting everybody else ahead of myself. It says nowhere in the gospel to do that. The great truth of that is, look at anybody that is integrated in life, and you show me a person that is genuinely integrated in terms of God and in terms of their faith and their belief and their understanding, and I'll show you a person that loves themselves. Mother Teresa of Calcutta. You know, people say to her, wow, said to her along the way, you're such a great woman, and she would say, hey, I'm great because of him and me. Not great because of me, I'm great because of what he chooses to do in me and through me and with me. I am great because of that. People say to us, me, hey, you're a great person. I say, no, but hey, tell me some more anyway, right? I mean, go ahead, keep that going. People of integrity don't do that. People of integrity know that reality. Love your neighbor as yourself is such an important piece. Because where does it begin? Not with your neighbor. It begins with you. Right at home. As yourself. And if you only half love yourself and you're terrified and fearful of the other half, then that's the extent to which you can love your neighbor. The glass is half full or three quarters full or quarter full or whatever in terms of my love of self. And that begins with him, knowing and being aware of the fact that he has first loved me. Begins with his love of me and the acceptance of that reality and then the integration of it. Then I start working on my neighbor. Problem for most of us is, we start working on loving our neighbor, hoping that they will love us in return and fill that particular void. What a tragedy. Love your neighbor as yourself begins with knowing how deeply valued and loved and treasured I am in him. What a great gospel. Man, he took them apart with such simplicity. Which is the greatest law? Let me tell you, they're like this. The early fathers in the church had a beautiful expression. They said, nemo dat quod non habet. If you ain't got it, you can't give it. What a great fundamental truth. Hey, if you don't love yourself, don't expect to love your neighbor. If you so despise yourself and have self-loathing and self-despise and self-hate, don't expect to be able to love your neighbor very well. Because you're going to pass a lot of trash. And you're going to pass a lot of judgment. You like the gospel? I love it. So, they'll try again. Isn't that what people do? They failed again. The lawyer, which is the greatest law? Man, did he get a surprise. It wasn't one, but two. And they were married to each other.